Usually when we talk about the whole American dream of relocating, there is this expectation of very simple, very comforting arithmetic.
Right, the classic equity arbitrage play.
Exactly. You sell a house in a massive, expensive metropolitan area, you pack up the moving truck, and you head to a smaller town where your big city equity just, magically transforms you into local royalty.
You cash out, move somewhere quieter, and just watch your cost of living completely plummet while your square footage basically doubles.
Yeah, but when you step into the specific migration corridor we are examining today, and we're talking about moving from Portland, Oregon, straight up the I-5 corridor to Bellingham, Washington, that comforting arithmetic completely shatters.
Oh, it really does.
In fact, I want to look at a specific scenario right out of the gate, just to show you how completely upside down this market is. Let's say you own a nice median-priced home in Beaverton, just outside Portland.
Okay, yeah.
You sell it for, let's say, $575,000. Take that money, you move 260 miles north to a town with a fraction of the population, and you buy a home for $650,000.
Which means you just moved to a significantly smaller city and paid $75,000 more for your house.
Exactly. It defies all conventional relocation logic. But as we unpack the actual math today, you're going to see how that counterintuitive move actually unlocks a massive financial safety net. Welcome to the deep dive.
It's great to be here.
Today, we are taking a highly practical, really granular look at what it actually means to trade Portland for Bellingham in 2026.
Yeah, and we have incredible source material for this.
We do. Today's entire discussion is built on an incredibly detailed 2026 relocation guide and cost analysis. It was put together by an 11-year Whatcom County real estate broker who frequently works with Portland transplants.
Which is such a valuable perspective because they see the actual numbers every day.
Right. Our mission here is to strip away the glossy postcard fantasies of the Pacific Northwest. We want to look at the brutal math, the honest climate trade-offs, and, the logistical realities of trading a metro of 2.5 million people for a city of 98,000.
Because if you are seriously considering this move, you cannot afford to operate on assumptions. You are completely reframing what value means in your daily life.
Exactly. But before we get into the complex financial engineering of that Beaverton to Bellingham transaction, we really need to understand the baseline context from our source.
Why are so many Portlanders looking north in the first place?
Right. What is generating this specific migration current? Let's unpack the reality on the ground in Portland. The data highlights four distinct friction points that are actively pushing residents to look for an exit.
And the first one is just a profound sense of downtown exhaustion.
Yeah, and we need to be really clear that we are just sharing the sources reporting on the data here and the exhaustion that buyers are expressing. Over the past few years, Portland has navigated incredibly complex civic challenges.
Very complex. We're talking about a homeless population hovering around 18,500.
And the highly visible struggles with open-air drug markets that followed the rollout of Measure 110. Now, for anyone unfamiliar, Measure 110 was the voter-approved initiative that decriminalized the personal possession of hard drugs.
Right, with the goal to shift toward a treatment-based model.
Exactly. But the logistical rollout of that treatment infrastructure severely lagged behind the decriminalization. It created a multi-year gap where the behavioral crises on the streets were highly concentrated and highly visible.
At least until the legislature stepped in to revise the law in 2024.
Right. And it is crucial to be accurate with the data here. If you look at violent crime, like homicides, Portland actually saw a massive 51% drop in the first half of 2025.
Oh, wow. So it is statistically getting safer.
It is getting safer in profound ways. But the people packing up moving boxes aren't necessarily fleeing out of a physical fear for their lives. They are exhausted by the daily grind of property crime and street-level unpredictability.
That ambient stress.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like having too many tabs open on your web browser. A broken car window here, a closed neighborhood restaurant there, a tense encounter at the grocery store.
Right, and none of those individual tabs will crash the computer on their own, right?
Exactly, but collectively they drain your mental CPU to zero. Eventually, the whole system slows down.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. It is a state of chronic urban friction. And that shift in the Portland psyche from the mid-2010s to 2026 is just vital to understand.
It's not a panic, is it?
No, it's not a panicked exodus at all. It is a highly calculated choice buyers are seeking a lower friction environment, which really frames the entire appeal of Bellingham.
Which brings us directly to the second friction point mentioned in the guide, traffic. We hear constantly about the Rose Quarter bottleneck on Interstate 5.
Oh, the Rose Quarter. It is a geographic and infrastructural choke point that has been debated for a generation.
If you live in a suburb like Hillsboro or Lake Oswego, your commute into the city center can easily stretch from 45 to 75 minutes each way.
Which means you are looking at 2.5 hours of your day just evaporating inside a vehicle.
Just to access the amenities or the job market of your own city.
Right. When you add that to the ambient civic exhaustion, the quality of life degrades significantly.
Then you have the third factor, which is the sheer financial weight of the Oregon tax code. Oregon enforces a graduated state income tax that tops out at 9.9%.
9.9. That is a massive chunk of your paycheck.
We are going to dedicate a lot of time to dissecting exactly how that impacts your wealth compared to Washington, because it really is the true financial engine of this entire relocation.
It's the quiet drain on wealth generation that residents tolerate when they love a city, but deeply resent when they feel the city is failing them.
Exactly. And the fourth major friction point driving this push is the volatility within Portland public schools.
Right. Families are navigating budget shortfalls, continuous debates over redistricting,
and the looming threat of school closures. If you have young children, stability is your most valuable currency. Constantly pivoting to accommodate shifting educational logistics is incredibly draining.
So if you put yourself in the shoes of a Portland resident right now, you are navigating the traffic, the aggressive tax bracket, the school volatility, and that compounding urban friction.
I'm sure exhausted.
You look at the equity you've built in your Portland home, and you decide it's time to cash out. But this is where we have to shatter that traditional relocation myth.
Let's get into the actual numbers, because the sticker shock here is very real. In early 2026, the median single-family home in Portland, which has actually softened slightly from its 2024 peak, is sitting right around $512,000 to $525,000.
Mm-hmm.
Bellingham's median single-family home is $710,000, with an overall residential median stretching up to $755,000.
What's fascinating here is that this move is absolutely not an equity arbitrage play. To get the exact same $512,000 Portland value in Bellingham, you have to buy a much smaller home.
Or push yourself way out to the fringes of the county, far away from the walkable neighborhoods you actually want.
Exactly.
Okay, I have to stop you there and push back. Because if I am a listener, I am looking at this math and thinking it is absolute insanity.
It looks crazy on paper.
Right. I am leaving a major metropolitan area with endless amenities, a world-class airport, an incredible food scene, to move to a quiet town of 98,000 people, and you are telling me I have to pay roughly $138,000 more for an average house.
Yeah.
Why on earth does this move make financial sense?
It sounds like financial self-sabotage until you look at the underlying mechanics of how real estate equity actually works in a transition like this.
Okay, break it down for us.
The mistake people make is conflating the purchase price of the new home with their actual out-of-pocket cash flow. Let's return to that Beaverton Market example we touched on in the beginning and trace the exact dollars.
Let's do it. Walk me through the transaction. You sell your Beaverton home for $575,000.
Right. And you aren't keeping all of that. You take roughly a 6% hit for agent commissions, title fees, and excise taxes.
Standard closing costs.
Exactly. So your net proceeds, the actual cash wired to your bank account, is about $540,000. Now, you get on the interstate, you drive to Bellingham, and you buy a home for $650,000.
Which means you are buying below the Bellingham median, but still paying a premium over what you just sold.
Correct. But here is the critical mechanism. You're not taking that entire $540,000 and dumping it into the new house. You secure a new mortgage and put down a standard 20% down payment.
Okay, so 20% of $650,000 is $130,000.
Add in maybe $15,000 for your buyer side closing costs, inspections, and loan origination fees. So your total cash out of pocket to get the keys to the Bellingham house is $145,000.
Right.
Now, subtract that $145,000 from the $540,000 you netted from the Portland sale.
Oh, wow. And there it is. You walk away with roughly $395,000 in pure liquidity. It's just sitting in your checking account.
This is the realization that unlocks the entire myth. You did not engage in equity arbitrage. You did not buy a sprawling mansion. What you did was engineer a massive liquidity event.
You took almost $400,000 of wealth that was completely trapped inside the drywall of your Portland home, and you made it liquid.
Precisely. You can take that $400,000, drop it into high-yield index funds, use it to aggressively pay down the new mortgage principal, or simply hold it as a massive safety net.
That is fascinating. But you still took on a larger mortgage for a more expensive property. Your monthly housing payment has likely gone up.
It has.
So how are you funding that higher month-to-month overhead without bleeding your new liquidity dry? And that brings us to the true financial engine of this entire relocation. It is not a real estate play. It is a massive tax play.
The tax differences between Oregon and Washington dictate almost every aspect of this migration.
Right, because Oregon has a graduated state income tax system. For higher earners, that tax rate scales up to an incredibly aggressive 9.9%.
And Washington famously has 0% state income tax.
But the state of Washington still needs to pave roads and fund schools, so they extract that revenue on the back end through sales tax.
Exactly. Oregon has 0% sales tax. You pay the sticker price on the shelf. In Washington, specifically in Bellingham, as of January 2026, you are paying a 9.1% sales tax on almost everything you buy.
So we have a direct collision of tax philosophies. Let's put some actual household incomes to this to see how the math shakes out.
Let's do it. Imagine a household in Portland making $200,000 a year. Under Oregon's graduated system, their state income tax burden is roughly $17,000 to $18,000 annually.
$18,000.
Yeah.
Just subtracted from their paycheques over the course of the year. So they moved to Bellingham. Overnight, that $18,000 tax bill vanishes entirely.
Poof. Gone. But now they have to survive in a sales tax state. Let's assume this household spends $60,000 a year on taxable goods, clothing, electronics, cars, dining out.
Importantly, standard groceries and prescription medications are generally exempt from sales tax in Washington, which definitely helps.
Yes, that's true. But on that $60,000 of taxable spending at a 9.1% rate, they're paying about $5,460 in sales tax over the year.
Let's run the final calculation then. You saved roughly $18,000 by escaping the income tax. You paid roughly $5,500 in new sales taxes. Your net annual savings is roughly $12,000 to $13,000.
Every single year.
Yeah.
And that $12,000 of newly freed monthly cash flow is exactly how you afford the slightly higher mortgage on the Bellingham house. The tax savings directly subsidizes the real estate premium.
But wait, that math works beautifully if you are a high earner. What if you aren't making $200,000? What if your household is pulling in $100,000 a year?
This is where we need to connect the dots regarding the break-even point, because the leverage shrinks drastically. At $100,000 of income, your Oregon state tax burden is much lower, around $7,500 to $8,000.
Okay, so if you move to Washington and spend $50,000 on taxable goods, you are paying roughly $4,500 in sales tax.
Right, so your net savings drops to maybe $3,000 or $3,500 a year.
Which is nice, but it is certainly not going to cover the leap to a $700,000 mortgage.
It isn't. And this highlights a vital reality. If your household earns roughly $60,000 to $75,000 or below, moving to Washington might actually cost you money.
Because the 9.1% sales tax burden completely outpaces the income tax savings.
Exactly. Washington is a highly regressive tax state. It heavily penalizes lower and middle income spenders while massively rewarding high earners.
That is such a critical warning from the source. Now, assuming you are in a bracket where this move makes sense, there is a brilliant piece of practical advice for the transition itself. If you are moving, you need to buy your big ticket items in Oregon before you move.
Oh, absolutely. It is the ultimate geographic life hack.
Think about it. If you need a new Subaru Outback for the Pacific Northwest winters, buy it at a dealership in Portland. Zero sales tax.
Right.
If you need a massive sectional sofa, a new refrigerator, or a home theater system for the new house, buy it all in Oregon. The absolute second you officially become a Washington resident, every single one of those purchases instantly gets 9.1% more expensive.
On a $40,000 car, you are saving nearly $3,600 just by buying it in your old zip code.
But we have to be extremely clear about what becoming a Washington resident actually means regarding the transition mechanics.
Yeah, you cannot just play fast and loose with the Departments of Revenue. Establishing your Washington domicile is a specific legal mechanism.
I can't just rent a P.O. box in Bellingham and call it good.
Exactly. On the exact date you move, you must change your driver's license, switch your vehicle registration, update your voter registration, and move your primary banking address to Washington.
The state of Oregon is not going to just let your tax revenue walk away without proof.
They absolutely will not. For the year you move, you will file your taxes as a part-year Oregon resident and a part-year Washington resident.
And there is a massive trap here for remote workers, right? The Oregon-sourced income trap.
It is the single biggest mistake Portland transplants make. Let's say you keep your job with a company headquartered in downtown Portland, but you move your laptop up to Bellingham, assuming you are now free from the 9.9% income tax.
Oregon disagrees.
Very strongly. If you are generating income from an Oregon-based entity, and you are not strictly legally classified by your HR department as a permanent remote worker operating in Washington, Oregon will still aggressively tax that income.
So you have to legally sever the income source's geographic tie to Oregon.
Yes. You almost always need to consult a cross-state CPA to ensure your corporate standing reflects your new physical domicile.
Okay, so we've covered the massive yearly tax savings. The income tax vanishes. The sales tax appears. But what does a random Tuesday actually feel like for your wallet when you walk out your front door in Bellingham?
Let's go through the day-to-day line items.
What gets cheaper and what gets more expensive?
Right. Let's start with the immediate wins. Dining out is noticeably more affordable. A sit-down dinner for two that might run you $60 to $90 in a mid-tier Portland restaurant is going to cost roughly $45 to $70 for comparable quality in Bellingham.
That's a solid difference. Utilities also offer a slight reprieve. In Bellingham, average monthly utilities sit around $160 to $220, compared to Portland's $180 to $250.
And then there are property taxes, which often confuse buyers because of the higher home prices.
Right, because if you're buying a more expensive house, you assume the tax bill goes up proportionally.
Exactly. But while your Bellingham home might be appraised much higher than your Portland home, the effective property tax rate in Whatcom County is lower. You are looking at roughly 0.85% in Whatcom compared to Multnomah County's 1.06%.
So practically speaking, the actual dollar amount you write to the county treasurer each year remains roughly flat, despite living in a more expensive house.
Yep. So food, utilities, and property taxes hold steady or drop, but you're definitely going to pay more at the gas pump.
Washington gas prices are consistently 30 to 40 cents higher per gallon than Oregon's.
They have a more aggressive gas tax structure linked to their climate initiatives.
And what about groceries?
The overall cost of groceries is broadly similar. Both cities run about 4 to 7% above the national average. But the ecosystem you are shopping in is vastly different.
This is one of the most interesting cultural shifts to me. I'm going to miss Portland's grocery competition. Portland has an incredibly fierce, hyper-segmented grocery culture. You have new seasons catering to highly specific, organic micro-neighborhoods, Zupans for high-end specialty items. It is an event to buy groceries.
Bellingham has a much more utilitarian ecosystem. You have your massive Fred Meyer, you have Hagen, which is a regional Pacific Northwest staple. You have Costco, and of course, the requisite Trader Joe's.
They definitely have the essentials covered, but it is undeniably a smaller, less diverse ecosystem.
It is. But I think that smaller ecosystem perfectly reflects the broader shift in the city's overall vibe.
How so?
Think about the dining scene we just mentioned. The lower cost of a meal in Bellingham isn't just because ingredients are cheaper. It reflects a completely different, unpretentious cultural ethos.
Ah, right. Bellingham has a phenomenal brewery scene and deep farm-to-table roots, but it lacks the intense competitive pretense of Portland.
You aren't fighting for a reservation at a pop-up tasting menu. You're just getting an excellent locally sourced salmon fillet without the Portland markup or the Portland attitude. It's a much more accessible price point.
All right, so you've justified the finances, you've unlocked the equity, you've hacked the tax code, and you are enjoying affordable farm-to-table dinners. But eventually, you have to walk outside.
You have to actually live under the sky.
And this is where we pivot to the most visceral and, frankly, the most physically impactful part of this entire guide, the weather. We have to do a deeply honest climate reality check.
This is where expectations frequently collide with meteorological reality. If you are a Portland resident fleeing because you are tired of the rain, do not pack your bags for Bellingham. you will be miserable.
Let's look at the baseline data.
Right.
Portland averages roughly 144 sunny days, generating about 2,340 sunshine hours a year. Bellingham averages only 2,000 sunshine hours. Bellingham is objectively, undeniably cloudier.
And they both receive a remarkably similar amount of annual precipitation, usually somewhere between 36 and 43 inches.
Most of which falls in a slow, continuous drizzle from October through April. But the people migrating in 2026 are rarely fleeing the rain. They are fleeing the heat.
Exactly. The climate psychology of Portland completely fractured during the heat dome of 2021, when temperatures hit a catastrophic 116 degrees Fahrenheit.
And it wasn't an isolated incident. Portland has experienced over 16 days exceeding 100 degrees since 2021. We have to understand the geography here. Portland sits in the Willamette Valley, which functions essentially as a geographic oven.
Right. During high pressure systems, the valley traps the heat, the wind dies, and the temperatures compound daily.
Furthermore, you have the Columbia River Gorge acting as a direct atmospheric funnel, dragging heavy, hazardous wildfire smoke from the interior down directly into the Portland metro area.
The summer climate in Portland has shifted from pleasant to acutely, genuinely stressful.
Bellingham, by direct contrast, offers a summer climate that is almost aggressively mild. The average July high is 72 degrees.
It's beautiful. And while Bellingham is not entirely immune to wildfire smoke, they do receive drift from fires in British Columbia, the geography protects them. They are situated right on the edge of the bay. The marine layer provides a natural, much better dispersion mechanism.
So you are buying a haven from the heat, but you pay a steep, dark price for that mild summer when winter arrives. Bellingham receives an average of 9 inches of snow annually compared to Portland's 3.
And it is a very different kind of snow. In Portland, a snowstorm usually hits, the temperature rises to 38 degrees by the afternoon, and everything turns into a slushy mess.
But in Bellingham, because it is situated so far north, the temperatures drop below freezing and they stay there. The snow hits the ground, freezes solid, and stays on the hills for days. It gets very slippery.
If you buy a home in a higher elevation neighborhood, winter driving becomes a serious logistical hurdle.
Which brings us to what might be the single most brilliant piece of advice from the source for anyone considering this move.
Oh, the November test.
Yes. Here's where it gets really interesting. You are absolutely forbidden from visiting Bellingham for the first time in August. Do not do it.
If you visit in August, you will sign a mortgage contract on a napkin.
Right. Because in August, Bellingham is arguably the most beautiful place on the continent. The bay is a glittering sapphire. The temperature is a flawless 74 degrees. Everyone is drinking craft beer on a patio. It is incredibly seductive.
You completely abandon your rational judgment.
Exactly. Instead, you must subject yourself to the November test. You must visit Bellingham when it has been relentlessly, oppressively gray and drizzly for 6 consecutive weeks.
When the sun sets at 4:45 p.m.
If you can walk around Bellingham in mid-November and still feel a sense of peace and belonging, you have passed the test.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we need to linger on the psychological trade-off here.
Yeah.
You're trading acute summer climate anxiety, the heat domes, and hazardous smoke for chronic winter gloom.
Right.
You have to know which one your mental health can handle. Do you have the internal fortitude to survive the dark?
All right, let's say you pass the November test. You love the gray, you understand the snow, and you've mapped out the taxes. We now hit a massive logistical wall. How do you actually keep your career alive? Can you keep your Portland job?
Well, the drive from Portland to Bellingham is 262 miles. Under ideal zero traffic conditions, that is a 4-hour and 20-minute drive nonstop.
Which means a daily physical commute is an absolute impossibility.
But the entire dynamic shifted, and this is a game changer. In March 2026, with the introduction of direct Alaska Airlines flights from Portland right into Bellingham.
PDX to BLI. It's exactly a 1-hour flight. On paper, it looks like a miracle for hybrid workers.
It completely rewires the geographic map of possibilities. We really have to categorize the listeners' work options here to see if it makes sense.
Okay, let's break it down. What if you are a fully remote worker?
Perfect. Bellingham is spectacular for that. The city has good fiber internet. There is a proliferation of co-working spaces downtown. You will integrate seamlessly.
But what if you are a hybrid worker?
This is where we define the frequency. If your Portland office demands your physical presence once a month, or maybe just once a quarter, that new direct flight makes it highly manageable now.
But if your hybrid role requires you to be at your desk in Portland weekly,
do not move. full stop. Unless you want to maintain a Portland crash pad, attempting a weekly flight commute will destroy your quality of life.
And let's look at the reality of that commute. I think a lot of people see 1 hour flight and lose their minds. But you have to drive to BLI, park, walk through TSA, wait, fly an hour, land at PDX, take the light rail 40 minutes into downtown Portland.
Right. It's not a 1 hour commute. It is a multimodal marathon.
And even if you are fully remote and don't need to commute to Portland at all, we have to talk about the brutal travel downgrade you are accepting by leaving. PDX is a massive, universally beloved hub.
It is. Direct flights almost anywhere.
Bellingham International, BLI, is tiny. It has limited routes. So if you move, your new primary travel hub automatically becomes Seattle-Tacoma, SEA.
And getting to SEA from Bellingham is a 90-minute drive south on Interstate 5.
Right, through the absolute worst of the Seattle metro sprawl. You effectively trade the daily urban commute traffic of Portland for a highly stressful airport commute traffic every single time you want to fly out.
You really have to weigh your wanderlust against your desire to live near the bay.
Okay, so you factored in the flights, the tax math works, and you love the gray winters. You are 100% on board. Now we hit the practical reality of execution. How do you actually coordinate buying a house that is 260 miles away without completely ruining your life with endless road trips?
The broker outlines a highly specific 5-step process designed specifically for out-of-state buyers to prevent exactly that kind of burnout.
Step one is the discovery call. But the critical piece of advice here is getting set up on direct NWMLS alerts, the Northwest Multiple Listing Service.
Yes. You have to get off consumer apps like Zillow. In a tight market, a house can receive multiple offers before it ever accurately shows as pending on an app. You need the direct, real-time data feed.
Step two is where the process gets incredibly modern and requires a massive leap of faith, the virtual tour. And I was blown away by this. We are talking about a live FaceTime walkthrough with your agent.
Right. They aren't just showing you the kitchen counters. They are opening every single drawer.
The phrase FaceTime crawl space tour just sounds completely absurd to me, but it is literally how this is transacted. They are walking down into the cobweb-filled crawl spaces with a flashlight. They are checking the garage.
It requires an immense amount of trust between buyer and agent. You are relying on a glowing rectangle in the palm of your hand to dictate whether or not you should commit $700,000 to a physical asset.
Which is exactly why step three, the actual physical scouting trip, is still absolutely necessary. But the strategy here is to take one, maybe 2 days, and walk through 8 to 12 targeted properties back to back.
And the most elegant logistical tip the broker offers is how to get there. Don't drive. Take the Amtrak Cascades train from Portland up to Bellingham.
It is a 4.5-hour, incredibly scenic ride right along the water.
And it drops you off right at the historic Fairhaven station.
I love the psychology of this detail. The train ride acts as a decompression chamber. It serves as a perfect low-stress transition into the slower pace of the new city before you even look at a house.
It's phenomenal. Step four is the offer and inspection phase. Now, Washington has a standard 1-3% earnest money deposit.
Let's contextualize that. If you are buying a $700,000 home, 3% means you are wiring $21,000 of your own cash just to secure the contract.
Right. But you negotiate a standard 10-day inspection contingency. This is your legal shield. If the inspector finds something catastrophic, you can walk away and retain your earnest money.
And finally, step five, closing. You don't even have to travel back to Washington to sign the final paperwork. The title companies, like Chicago Title, coordinate remote signing via a mobile notary.
But the logistical beauty of this entire sequence is how you align the Portland sale with the Bellingham purchase to avoid bridge loans entirely.
Because a bridge loan is a short-term, high-interest nightmare.
Exactly. To avoid that, you execute a synchronized sequence. When you accept an offer on your Portland home, you negotiate for a 30 to 45-day buyer's possession date.
So you sell your house, get the cash, but legally continue living in your Portland home for another month or so.
Yes. Then, with liquid cash in hand, you fly up to Bellingham, make your offer, and set a closing date that perfectly aligns. You pack the moving truck once.
It is an elegant, frictionless sequence. So you are on that Amtrak train, rolling into the station. Where exactly is the agent taking you? Let's do a deep dive into the 5 targeted landing zones where Portland transplants actually fit.
The first, and by far the most popular premium choice, is Fairhaven.
We are talking entry points of $700,000, easily scaling up to $1.1 million.
It is a historic, Victorian-era village district that is highly walkable.
It has the ferry terminal, independent bookstores like Village Books, which is massive. The sensory experience of Fairhaven is unapologetically Portland. It's very bohemian.
If you are deeply mourning the loss of a walkable Portland neighborhood, Fairhaven is the closest replication you will find.
Okay, but what if I want the water views, but I refuse to pay that Fairhaven premium for walkability?
Then you look right next door to Edgemoor. Prices here range from $650,000 to $950,000.
So you are trading dense urban walkability for space. The lots are larger, there are mature trees, and you get direct access to Boulevard Park.
It's a quieter option for those wanting water views.
All right, what if I am coming from a neighborhood right next to Forest Park in Portland? I want the trees. Where do I go?
You want Sahum. $500,000 to $750,000 is the absolute perfect Forest Park alternative.
Because it's walkable to Western Washington University, WWU, and it wraps entirely around a 180-acre arboretum.
Yes. Deep woods access right in the city. Now, if your primary objective is Panoramic Bay and San Juan views, you head up to South Hill.
$650,000 to $1.1 million. Higher elevation, more of a suburb feel, but premium views.
And finally, we have Barkley. This is the most purely suburban option on the list. $550,000 to $800,000.
Newer homes, a modern retail center, very low maintenance, highly family focused.
And if we're discussing families, we have to look at how the regional school districts fundamentally shape the culture here. The Bellingham School District itself is highly stable.
But as you move out, the options diversify. Ferndale has brand new state-of-the-art facilities.
And then if you drive 15 miles north, you find Linden. Linden is fascinating because it is shaped by a very deep, historically conservative, Dutch Reformed community heritage.
Oh, wow. So that's a complete cultural departure from Bellingham.
It is. It operates on a different rhythm. Historically, it was much more traditional regarding Sundays and alcohol sales. It highlights how localized culture is in Whatcom County.
And the biggest cultural anchor driving Bellingham itself is Western Washington University, right?
Absolutely. With roughly 16,000 students, WWU keeps the culture young and arts-focused without feeling like a transient company town.
Okay, so the boxes are unpacked. It's a Tuesday night 6 months later. What does life actually feel like now?
Well, you have to acknowledge the scale change. You scaled your daily existence down from 2.5 million to 98,000. You lose things.
You lose the endless Tuesday night restaurant options, the pro sports, the multiple distinct neighborhood scenes.
But what you gain in return is proportional access. Mount Baker's a 90-minute drive away. The San Juan Islands ferry is right there.
And here is a secret weapon. Vancouver, British Columbia, is only 51 miles north.
Vancouver becomes your new go-to for major international city culture and world-class food, like the Granville Island Public Market.
Although you do need a Nexus Pass to avoid sitting in an hour of border traffic on I-5.
Oh, absolutely mandatory. But once you have it, Vancouver is incredibly accessible.
You trade the dense energy of Portland for Bellingham's unparalleled nature. I loved the imagery from the source. Standing on Whatcom Creek Trail at 7 a.m., watching herons in the mist with no one else around before a 9 a.m. call.
But we have to address the Portland withdrawal. The source notes that people desperately miss the food carts and the alternative culture for about a year.
The pace of your life dials down two notches. You have to be ready for less ambient noise.
Those who struggle most are those who underestimated how much of their personal identity was tied to Portland's specific arts and dining scene.
So let's do a final rapid synthesis of this deep dive. The move from Portland to Bellingham is a tax-fueled, lifestyle-shifting trade.
You trade equity for safety and quiet. You trade heat domes for snow and gray.
And you trade boundless city amenities for unparalleled, uncrowded nature.
It's a massive shift.
It really is. I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over tonight, building on the source's point about identity. We spend so much time running the numbers on property taxes and square footage, but the hardest math to calculate is the social cost.
So true.
When you strip away a city of 2.5 million people, the endless food scenes, and the 9.9% tax rate, are you actually looking for a new city, or are you hoping that in a quiet town of 98,000, you'll finally have the space to meet a new version of yourself? Think about it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.